If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Co-founder and director of the University of Chicago Crime Lab has a new book out. It's called Unforgiving Places, The Unexpected Origins of American Gun Violence. You may have seen his op-ed in the Sun-Times. You may have seen the brief article about him in Chicago Magazine, and I'm anxious to read his book. I was also pleased that in the magazine they just said, what gave you the idea in 2007 to start the Crime Lab? And he said, there was a doctoral student in chemistry at the University of Chicago named Amadou Cisse, and that fall, after about 2 weeks after he defended his dissertation, he was shot and killed about a block off campus. That led to a lot of conversation about how a university can be more helpful to our home city and to cities more generally. How do we nerds who specialize at looking at data make the world better? The answer we came up with is that government is really the 800-pound gorilla. The city of Chicago spends close to $20 billion a year. The state more than $50 billion. The federal government trillions. Could we, as a research and development partner, help the public sector to spend its money in as socially effective a way as possible? And they're doing that here in Chicago. And we appreciate you joining us today. Welcome to the show, Jens.
Thanks so very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Jens Ludwig is here. What a touching story, too. I'm glad that that young man's name is not lost to history and that it was the impetus for what you all did.
Yeah, it really was an eye-opening moment for the University of Chicago. We like to say that we've won more Nobel Prizes than any other university in the world. And yet, you can see here we're not having nearly as much impact as we should have, literally in our own backyard. And this was on the heels also of a National Academy of Sciences Blue Ribbon Commission report reviewing everything that we knew from the research at the time about what we as a country could do to prevent gun violence. And the conclusion was not much. And we thought that's something that a great research university like the University of Chicago could and should be trying to help solve.
Are you an economist by trade then? What is your educational background?
I am an economist by training. And one of the things that drew me to economics originally was it's about using ideas and testing those ideas with data to try and understand how the world works and make it better. And I think we've seen in lots of other areas of life, the power of economics has had real impact. And we've been doing our best for the last 18 years to see if we could do that on the problem of gun violence as well.
Why is the subtitle of your book, The Unexpected Origins of America's Gun Violence?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've come to the conclusion that that one of the reasons that we as a country have not made more progress in addressing the gun violence problem is that we've misunderstood it. A lot of what we've thought about the gun violence problem is wrong. So if you're, you know, right of center, you tend to think of gun violence as being due to morally bad people who aren't afraid of the criminal justice system. So the only thing that you can do is disincentivize them by threatening them with stiffer penalties. If you're on the left, you think of the gun violence problem as mostly about economically desperate people who are doing whatever it takes to survive. And so the only thing that you can do is disincentivize them by making the alternatives to crime more appealing, things like jobs programs or changing the safety net. And what both the left and the right implicitly share in common is the assumption that most shootings are premeditated and preceded by some sort of deliberate thinking about the pros and cons before anybody pulls the trigger. And that turns out to be not what most shootings are in America. Most shootings are not premeditated. They're not motivated by economic considerations. They're arguments that go sideways and end in tragedy because someone's got a gun. And that's not the sort of type of thinking that incentives are really good at changing. So we no wonder that approach hasn't done more good than I argue that we just need a very different way of thinking about the problem and what to do about it.
I want to get to that in a second. But is it also true that most victims of gun crimes know the shooter personally?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit, there's a gray, most shooters are acquaintances, at least, with the victim. And so the sort of, you know, random robbery that goes sideways and ends in a tragedy does happen, but that's not what most shootings in Chicago and other American cities are. You know, it's young people who might go to the same high school and they get in an argument over a girl or something like that.
I say that because I have so many friends in the city and so many in the suburbs and so many in the exurbs. And the further out you get, it seems the more fearful they are of coming into Chicago. And I often say that if you're not selling or buying drugs on the South or West Side or unfortunately riding the L at 2 a.m. on a Saturday, you're probably not going to be the victim of a gun crime or a crime at all, that the city is exceedingly safe. And that's small consolation to the people maybe that do live on the South and West Side or live near gang violence, but you're not going to be there. I just wonder what you make about that rhetoric of mine.
Yeah, I think that there is, there's definitely something to what you're saying. At the same time, I do also think that all of us, regardless of what your own personal victimization risk is, all of us are in the same boat. All of us are in this together, and we need to realize that we've all got a huge stake in solving this. You know, I think many people are living themselves with a very tragically high risk of being shot themselves. Everybody else, even if you're not at high risk yourself, should care enormously about that because it's one of the most important public health and humanitarian crises that we have in American cities. And on top of that, I think this, I've come to really believe that gun violence is the problem that sits upstream of every other problem that cities face. You know, my University of Chicago colleague, Steve Levitt, did a study a few years ago where he found every murder that happens in a city reduces the city's population by fully 70 people. That's people moving out and fewer people moving in. And, you know, I think, I don't know how many people know this, but the city of Chicago has about a million fewer people today as it did in 1950. So we were a city of close to 3.7 million people in 1950, and we're closer to 2.7 million today. There are lots of reasons that people move, but the gun violence problem that we have here in Chicago is one of the most important of those drivers, and that makes everything else that the city tries to do so much harder. Deliver quality education, pay off our pension debt, raise tax revenue for all of the other problems that everybody in the city cares about.
Back to the origin of a gun crime, a shooting, you say it's not the sort of premeditated, I'm going to rob a bank with a gun or I'm going to go rob you on the train. It's a personal grievance usually, and the gun is the unfortunate resolution to either the immediate disagreement or problem or a past grievance. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the most recent data that we looked at Chicago in Chicago suggests, you know, something maybe on the order of like there are a bunch of murders that the police don't find out what the motivation is. But our best guess is that something like 70 to 80% of the shootings, at least among those where the police find out the motivation, stem from arguments. They're, you know, they start with words, they're garden variety arguments, and then they end in tragedy because someone's got a gun.
And is the solution then let's get rid of guns?
Well, it is definitely true that people in other rich cities around the world, like London, get into arguments no less frequently than people in Chicago do. And the murder rate is dramatically lower in London than it is in the United States. And I think the data confirm what common sense would suggest is the fact that we have so many more guns here in America plays an important role in that. And so if there were a button that you could push that would cause the 400 million guns that we have in America to go away, I think the data suggests that that would certainly make the city of Chicago and every other American city much safer. The challenge is that nobody has that button, and I think we're all reading the same newspaper headlines to suggest that gun politics in Washington, D.C. are stuck at best for the foreseeable future. And, you know, I think the good news is that gun violence equals guns plus violence. That is, it's not just about gun availability. It's also about the willingness of people to use those widely available guns to hurt one another. And so even if gun politics are stuck in America, there's a second path to trying to solve the problem, which is changing people's willingness to use guns to hurt one another.
Are you also calculating then the instances where the gun doesn't get used? A carjacking, a shakedown of a cell phone on the street might happen as a result of somebody threatening to use a gun but never using it. That doesn't get maybe counted as gun violence, but therein goes the car or the phone, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, I was held up at gunpoint myself 5 or 6 years ago going to pick up my oldest daughter from a piano lesson on the south side of Chicago where I was living at the time. And, you know, it's not just, you know, that the cost of being held up at gunpoint, as anyone who's had the misfortune of experiencing that will tell you, the cost is not the fun.
Yeah.
The cost is not, you know, losing your car keys. The cost is not your lost credit cards or having a good or new driver's license or whatever. The cost is the realization over and over and over again that what started as a robbery could have ended as a murder. And in my case, what makes it even more petrifying is that had the robbery lasted just 30 seconds longer, my eighth grade daughter would have walked out right in the middle of it. And, you know, you're just never the same having gone through an experience like that and running the what ifs over and over and over in your mind.
I'm sorry you had to suffer through that. I had an experience that was not that traumatic, but was a mugging, and it stays with you for a while, too. I wonder if you were inclined to tell your muggers, do you know who I am? I'm the director of the Crime Lab. Do you even realize how ironic this is right now?
I know. I will confess that, you know, for a long time, I thought surely this wouldn't happen to me. It would just be too ironic. You know, plot armor would keep me safe. And I think what it makes you realize is, you know, even though the city as a whole is, I was very stupidly, you know, I'm a big Philadelphia 76ers fan. I shouldn't say that on the radio station, listen to a bunch of Bulls fans, but I grew up outside of Philly and I was stupidly looking at my phone to check the Sixers score and not paying attention to my surroundings.
Yeah.
But it just reminds us that everybody living in any American city needs to be, there's a certain level of vigilance that unfortunately we all need to have.
Jens Ludwig is on a line with us. He is the director of the Chicago Crime Lab, which has been in business for about 18 years now. He's got a new book out, and the book is getting some attention. I haven't read it, but I will, and you'll hear more about it. Unforgiving Places, The Unexpected Origins of American Gun Violence. And in there, you talk about eyes on the street. So let's pick it up there. What are you talking about, and how does that help with gun violence?
Yeah, you know, I think the if there's a wonderful book that came out 60 years ago by the urban planner Jane Jacobs, who was looking around Greenwich Village. She was living in Greenwich Village at the time. She's looking around lower Manhattan and seeing that similarly poor neighborhoods wind up being very, very different in their level of crime and violence. And she argued that the explanation was differences across neighborhoods in, you know, the degree to which there were people out on the street looking out at what's going on and willing to step in and serve the public good, like de-escalate conflict when it looks like something's gonna happen. And we can see similar differences across neighborhoods here in Eyes on the Street here in Chicago as well. And I think that points to two types of two types of things that the city can do that I think we have not appreciated the huge importance of. And I think the good news is that they don't take tons of money. So the first thing that we can do, you know, there's a big policy conversation going on in the U.S. around trying to make government work better. This is like the abundance agenda. How do we get rid of regulations to make things just easier to do? And, you know, I would argue that we should start by making it easier to zone commercial activity in neighborhoods where there's just not much of that right now. Like if there's going to be an abundance agenda, let's start in the most economically distressed neighborhoods in Chicago. Because as Jane Jacobs argued 60 years ago, you know, that having stores and restaurants and cafes and grocery stores interspersed with residential apartments and houses is a really important way to get people out of their homes and out in the public places. You know, similarly, the Cook County Land Bank takes abandoned lots and turns them into nice pocket parks. That's another really important thing that we can do to get people out of their homes and create eyes on the street. And there's really good data to suggest that that can be shockingly important for shootings. You know, there's research that suggests that doing things like that, you know, on each of those things can reduce shootings by 10, 20, 30%. You add that up and you're starting to talk about real differences in gun violence. And I think the one other thing that I would just mention is we spend a lot of money on police and community violence intervention workers, and we don't do nearly as much as we could in using data to place them in the times and places where gun violence predictably happens. And using data is like is practically free for cities because they've got the data anyway.
Do you like ShotSpotter then?
You know, I think that the data suggests that ShotSpotter doesn't prevent crime. The main effect of ShotSpotter seems to be in getting first responders to gunshot victims faster to reduce the chances that they die before they can reach the emergency room.
I just wanted to mention a paragraph that was in your piece in the paper the other day. You wrote, when Forrest Claypool took over the Chicago Park District under Mayor Richard M. Daley, he asked the police superintendent how many more officers would be needed to make the park safe. As recounted in Claypool's The Daily Show, the superintendent said, none. You just have to get people back in the parks. The drug dealers and gangbangers don't want to be around people. It is like a dog chasing his tail, though. You know, it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? People will be safer if they go out, but they won't go out until it's safe. I wonder if the mayor or somebody can sound the alarm. I wonder how we get people to sort of reclaim their communities that way and by their presence make them safer. What's the spark that we need?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that this has got to involve things that you would traditionally think of as being relevant for gun violence, like police officers and community violence interrupters. But I think those are the ingredients that start to get us a spark. But I think anything else that the city can do to create foot traffic in communities, zoning, cleaning up vacant lots, you know, anything like that, things that even changing street lighting changes aspect, any change to the built environment that gets people out of their homes in the public, you wouldn't think of that as being necessarily super important for the gun violence problem, but there's lots of data to suggest that it's shockingly important and reinforces everything that these traditional means of gun violence prevention can get started.
I will say just anecdotally, a friend of ours here at WGN Radio, Pastor Corey Brooks, who has a couple of projects working in Woodlawn, says that all the time. He takes pride in the sort of community involvement and improved safety in his neighborhood. And he said, it's because we're out there. And I think that's violence interrupters. I don't know how many, you know, street fests they're having or how much park space they have. But you also point out, we only have 45 seconds left, but we would do a lot better in this city if we did have more dots of green space. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that's something that the Cook County Land Bank has been pushing on. And I think anything we can do to support their efforts would wind up having a surprisingly important double dividend, for not just making the city look and feel nicer, but safer as well.
When does your book come out on forgiving places?
Book came out last Monday. It's available on Amazon and at bookstores near you.
Let me read it and then invite you back. We'll have another conversation like this, all right?
I'd love to do that. Thanks so much again for having me on.
Jens Ludwig is the Edwin A. and Betty L. Bergman Distinguished Service Professor at the University of Chicago. He's the guy over at the University of Chicago Crime Lab.